Tonight's share is on this week's Parsha, which is Parshas Chukos, and the title is Another War with Amalek. So tonight's share, we're going to look at a little story at the beginning of Perek Chaf Aleph in this week's Parsha, and there's two interesting approaches that Rashi and the Chizkuni take in terms of how to understand the story. So if you look in source number one, it's Bamidbar Perek Chaf Aleph Pasuk Aleph. It's only three psukim. So I'm going to read through the psukim as usual and just summarize them afterwards. It says, Vayishma Knani Melech Arad Yoshev HaNegev, Ki ba Yisrael derech asarim ba yilachem bi Yisrael ba yish mimenu shevi. So what happened was that the Jews were traveling towards Eretz Yisrael, and it says that the Kanani king of Arad, who was living in the south of Eretz Yisrael, ended up fighting with the Jewish people, and they took one captive. They took a captive. Vayidar Yisrael neder lashem vayomar im nasoti tan es ama zeb yadi vacharamti es arihem. So the Jews, they made a neder, they made a vow to Hashem that if Hashem gave this group of people to the Jewish people, if the Jewish people were able to conquer them, so it says Vacharamti Asarihem. So they'll consecrate their cities, they'll devote their cities and all the spoils of the cities to Hashem, to the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan. Vayishma Hashem b'kol Yisrael vayitena saknani vayicharim esem esarihem vayikra Hashem hamakom charma. So what happens is that the Jews are successful, they destroy the Kananim, and they end up calling this place Charma. So the story, which is a short story in this week's Parsha, if you could put the mute button on, it's a little loud in the background. So the story is that in this week's Parsha, in Perek Chaf Aleph, there are three psukim, and it talks about this mini battle that the Jewish people had with this Kanani king who was Melech Arad Yoshev HaNegev, who lived in the south of Eretz Yisrael. So, of course, the question is, what's the purpose of this little story, of this little war? And the Jewish people in the story, they end up making a neder. So it's bizarre. Why do they make a neder? And what's the Torah trying to teach us about this little tiny war that the Torah is presenting to us in three psukim? What are we supposed to learn from this war? So Rashi quotes a famous medrash, and there's two parts to it. And this is very interesting. It's fascinating, Rashi. So Rashi in source number two, it's on Pasuk Aleph, says, Vayishma Knanish. So what did he hear? Shama Shemes Aaron Nistalku Anane Kavod. So the first thing that's strange is it says in the beginning, in the first Pasuk, Vayishma Knani Melech Arad, that the Kanani king, he heard. So what did he hear? He heard that the Anani Kavod, the Ananim that were there to protect Klal Yisrael and were there to flatten the ground when they walked, were gone. Kedisa, once Aaron died. Kedisa, Rosh Hashanah. So, as it says in Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah talks about, which we'll do inside, it talks about how when Aaron died, the Anani Kavod were gone. V'amalek me'olam ritzuos mardos li'Yisrael mizuman b'chol eis l'paranios. Now, this is interesting. Rashi says that Amalek, they're always waiting to attack Klal Yisrael, and in this story, in Chukos, it was really Amalek that was attacking Klal Yisrael. So, of course, the question is that the Torah never calls it Amalek, and the title of this year is Another War with Amalek, but if you look in the Psukim, it says Vayishma Knani Melech Arad Yoshev HaNegev. It talks about the Knanim. It doesn't talk about Amalek. So what does Rashi mean here that Amalek is always ready to battle? And furthermore, what's this concept that the Ananim were tied to Aaron, and once Aaron died, the Ananim were gone, and now they felt that they could fight with Klal Yisrael? Why do they feel that way? But let's look at this idea in Amalek more. So this is an interesting, very bizarre medrash. It says Yoshev HaNegev, Ze Amalek. So this was really Amalek. Shenamar Amalek Yoshev Be'eret HaNegev. It says in Bamidbar, in Perek Gimel Pasuk Chav Tes, that Amalek, they lived in the south of Eretz Yisrael. Vishina Slashona Lidaber B'Lashon Kanan. So what happened was that Amalek really lived there, but they changed their language to speak with the Kanan language. Kidei Shu Yisrael Mispalim La Kadosh Baruch Hu Laseith Kananim B'Yodam V'Heim Enam Kananim. So the Amalek had an interesting plan, and the plan was that they were going to pretend to be Kananim and not Amalek, and that way, when the Jewish people, when Klal Yisrael davened to Hashem, instead of davening to destroy Amalek, they would daven to destroy Kanan. And Ro'u Yisrael levushem ki levushe Amalekim ulishonam lishon Kanan. So the Jewish people were confused. On the one hand, they saw that they dressed like Amalek, but on the other hand, they were speaking like Kanan, so they weren't sure who they were. Were they Kanan? Were they Amalek? Amru nispalo stam shenemar im nason titan es ama zeb yadi. So their response was that they were going to daven to Hashem stam. They didn't specify which nation. It just says ha'am, any nation. So this is a bizarre type of medrash for many reasons. But one reason is that this plan, what was the real plan of Amalek? Did they really plan, did they really think that because the Jewish people wouldn't specify Amalek in their tefillah, the Jewish people wouldn't be answered? What kind of idea is that? I mean, you'd think that if Klal Yisrael are davening to Hashem, Hashem knows who they're referring to. So why does it matter who they specify? Is it Amalek? Is it Canaan? So that's really the, one of the main questions that we're going to take up. In this strange story, you have the Amalekim pretending to be Canaanim so that the Jewish people daven to Hashem in order to destroy the Canaanim when it's really the Amalekim. So somehow they thought that this would work, and the Jewish people responded to this, and they tried to figure a way around it. So the question is, what, you know, what were the Jewish people thinking as well? Why did they have to avoid davening to Hashem to destroy the Canaanim? It's just a strange type of medrash. It seemed like it wouldn't matter. First of all, Hashem knows. He's omniscient, so he knows who Klal Yisrael are referring to. And who cares who Klal Yisrael are referring to in specific? You know, who cares if they say they call them Canaanim or Amalek? They know who they're going up against. So what kind of plan was this that Amalek had to try to confuse Klal Yisrael? So finally, the Torah, the Rashi just explains Derech Asarim, Derech Negev, Shehalchu ba Meraglim, Shneamar Vayalu ba Negev, Davaracher Derech Asarim, Derech Hatayer Hagadol Hanoseh Lefneim. So what does Derech Asarim mean? It either means they followed the path of the spies, the Meraglim, or it means that it's referring to the Aron. The Aron was the tour guide, and the Aron would go in front of them, and they were following it, Shneamar Derech Shloshes Yomim, Lasur Lahem Menucha. So the Jewish people were traveling and following the Aron, and that's when they were attacked by Amalek. And it wasn't a big, they weren't successful. They only attacked them and they only captured one person, one shivcha, one maidservant. So again, the main questions, there's really two questions I want to take up in this shir. The first question is this concept that the Anani Kavod were tied to Aaron. Aaron died right before this incident in the Parsha. So somehow, or for some reason, when Aaron died, the Anani Kavod, the clouds of glory, were removed from Klal Yisrael. So what's that concept? And second of all, how did the Amalekim really, how do they think that they were going to be, succeed in trying to confuse Klal Yisrael? Why would that really make a difference in terms of whether Klal Yisrael would be successful? And also, we'll try to explain the idea of the nether here. Why does the nether work? Okay, so that's really, those are all the questions. So let's first take up the first point. And the first point is this idea that the Ananim were tied to Aaron, the clouds of glory that protected Klal Yisrael, and that they flattened the earth for Klal Yisrael. They did many things. So it was tied to Aaron. So if you look in source number 3, it's Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, and that's the Gemara that Rashi quotes. And it says, Vayishma Knani Melech Arad, Mashmu Hashama. So what did he hear? Shama Shemes Aaron. So like Rashi, Rashi just quotes this Gemara, that he heard the Melech Arad, this Amalek guy, he heard that Aaron had died. V'nistalku Anani Kavod, and therefore the Anani Kavod were gone. Ksavor Nisna Rishus Lilachim B'Yisrael. So he maintained that now was the appropriate time. They had permission to fight with Klal Yisrael. It was the appropriate time. Vayinu dechsiv vayiru kol aida ki yava Aaron v'amar Rabbi Avahu al tikre vayiru ela vayiru'u. Vayiru'u, sorry. So it says in the Gemara that when they saw that Aaron had died, don't read it vayiru that they saw, but read it vayiru'u, which means that they feared, they were afraid. So the Gemara says that Amalek decided to attack once they heard that Aaron died because the Anani Kavod, the clouds of glory, were removed, and the Jewish people were afraid. Vayiru k'dereish lakish, damereish lakish, ki meshamish ba'arva lishonos. So we hold like Reish Lakish, who holds that the word ki in the Torah really teaches you four different possibilities. E, which means if, dilma, perhaps, ela, but, and daha, for. So ki gava Aaron means that because Aaron had died, that's why Amalek chose to attack Klal Yisrael, and that's why the Jewish people, that's why they were afraid. So the question is, what's this idea, what's the concept that A, they believe that this was the proper time for them to fight Klal Yisrael, and furthermore, why is it that when Aaron died, the Anani Kavod were lost, were gone? So that's really the first question. So there's a deeper Gemara that explains this in more depth, and it gives us more facts, actually, in terms of understanding this connection between Aaron and the Anani Kavod, and these clouds of glory, and why they would be lost when Aaron had died, and how do we explain Amalek's response to this? So if we look in source number 4, it's the Gemara Tainis, Daf Tes Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says, Meisve, there's an objection. It's a whole question of whether or not there's Hashgacha on the Yachid or the Rabbim for Klal Yisrael as a whole. So Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shlosha Parnasim Tovim Amduli Yisrael. So there were three very good leaders, great leaders, in Klal Yisrael that stood for Klal Yisrael, in Klal Yisrael. Elohim, who are these three great leaders? Moshe, the Aaron, and Miriam. So the triumvirate, the three great leaders are Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, all siblings. Ushlosh, Matanos, Tovos, Nisnu, Al Yadam. And there were three great gifts that were given to Klal Yisrael because of Moshe, Miriam, and Aaron. The Elohim. So what were the three? So the Be'er, the Anan, Uman. So the well that used to travel with them, which would provide them with water. The Anan, which was the cloud, and the Mon. The Mon, which was the food, the sustenance. Be'er, Bischus, Miriam. So really the idea of the water was, the well was because of Miriam. It was in her schus, in her merit, that the Jewish people got the well. Amud Anan, Bischus, Aaron. So the Amud Anan is because of Aaron. Mon, Bischus, Moshe. And the Mon was Bischus, Moshe. Mesa, Miriam, Nistaleka, Be'er. Once Miriam died, so the well was gone. So once Miriam died, they no longer had this traveling well with them to provide them with water all the time. Shneamar, as it says, Vatamas Sham Miriam, Uchsiv Basrei, V'lo Hayam Mayim La'ida. So it says that Miriam died, and there was no longer any water for the nation. V'chazra B'schus Shneyan, and it came back because of Aaron and Moshe. So the first idea the Medrash says is that the Be'er, the well, was there for Miriam, and after Miriam died, it went away. But then shortly after that, because of the schus of Aaron and Moshe, they warranted to come back. So they got the Be'er back, right? So now it says, Mes Aaron, Nistalko Anani Kavod. Once Aaron died, all the Ananim that protected Klal Yisrael were gone. Shneamar Vayishma Knani Melech Arad, Mashmua Shama, Shama Shemes Aaron, Venistalko Anani Kavod, same as Rosh Hashanah. So he heard that the Ananim were gone once Aaron died. Uchsavar nisno lo rishus li lachem b'Yisrael. And he thought that it was the time for him to fight Klal Yisrael. V'hainu dechsev v'yiru kol ayda ki gava Aaron. It's the same as the Gemara before. Amar Rabbi Avo al tikre v'yiru ele v'yiru'u k'dereish lakish d'amar reish lakish ki mishabash b'arba l'shonos. I dilma ele daha. So the second idea was that when Aaron died, so the Be'er came back because of Aaron and Moshe. But now when Aaron died, the Ananim went away. And then it says, afterwards, Chazru Shneim b'schus Moshe. But of course, Moshe was still alive, and because of the schus of Moshe, so everything was returned, the Ananim were returned as well. So when Moshe was alive, there was the Mon, the Be'er, and the Ananim. But of course, when Miriam died, the Be'er went away temporarily, and when Aaron died, the Ananim went away temporarily. Meis Moshe nistalaku kulon. But when Moshe died, everything went away. Right when they were about to go into Eretz Yisrael, they lost the Mon, they lost the Ananim, and they lost the Be'er. Shneamar, as it says in Zechariah, v'achidesh shloshes haroim b'yerach echad. So it says that I cut off. I think it means to destroy shloshes haroim, the three shepherds, or I killed off the three shepherds in 1 month. V'chi b'yerach echad mesu. Did they all die in the same month? V'halo Miriam mesa b'nisan v'aron ba'av. So Miriam died in Nisan, Aaron died in Av, Moshe ba'adar, and Moshe died in Adar, Elam Alamech, Nisbalu Shalosh Matanos, Tovo, Shinisnu Al Yadan, Vinistalku Kulan Beyarach Echad. So it teaches us that all of the three gifts that were given because of these individuals were lost or were gone in the same month when Moshe died. So again, we see in this Medrash, you know, a similar idea as the other Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, but it elaborates on it more, and it says that really there are three gifts. It wasn't just the Ananim to Aaron, but there's a comparison, and there's the Be'er for Miriam. The well was given b'schus Miriam, then the Ananim were given b'schus Aaron, and the idea of the Mon was b'schus Moshe, and of course, when Miriam died, so the Be'er was lost temporarily, and then it came back because of Aaron and Moshe. When Aaron died, so the Ananim were gone, but then they came back because of the schus of Moshe, and then finally, when Moshe died, the Anan, the Mon, and the Be'er, they were all gone. So the question is, what's this idea? What's the concept of tying these three gifts to these three individuals? And it would seem like the Jewish people needed this stuff in the Midbar. So what do we learn from the fact that these three gifts were given to Klal Yisrael? I mean, they needed Mon, they needed some method of sustenance, they needed the Be'er. So why are we tying it to these three individuals? And what's the concept of tying it to the three individuals of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam? And why do they come back, of course? So it seems like the Gemara is telling us an idea in the perfection, the level of Aaron, Miriam, and Moshe. And it seems like Moshe, of course, was on the highest level, and that's why, b'schus Moshe, these three things came back, the Be'er, the Anan, and of course, the Mon. But what's the concept? What's the tie-in? So I think the tie-in is a deep concept about the nature of Aaron and Moshe and Miriam, that they related to God's abilities, to Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's abilities, differently than everybody else in the Midbar. And this is the concept that the Hashgacha was trying to express. So what? How do they relate to Hashem differently? See, when you're in the Midbar, typically there's a lot of fears and insecurities that emerge, especially about food, water, protection. I mean, it's a dangerous place, the Midbar. It's a place where obviously there's not a lot of water, there's no food, there's no way to sustain yourself. The Midbar is desolate, and it's a terrible place to exist. So a normal person on a regular level starts to doubt the ability of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to provide for them. And it doesn't mean that Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam expected Hashem to provide for them, and they weren't being somech al anes. But what it's teaching us is that Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, they didn't doubt Hashem's ability and his capability of providing for them, even in such a desolate place. And you see that the Jewish people got scared all the time, and they get nervous about having water and having enough food, and they're constantly plagued by these insecurities. But sometimes those insecurities can affect your perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and your relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because the more you're insecure about these things, the more you doubt the ability of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to provide for you in that way. So if you're in the desert, for example, and you're starving and you need water, so you start thinking, maybe it's impossible. Maybe it's not possible for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to provide me with this at this moment. But of course, Aaron and Moshe and Miriam, they had a different knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and their knowledge allowed them to attain a certain level of security and a certain level of capability of perceiving HaKadosh Baruch Hu's power and his strength and his might and his ability to sustain Klal Yisrael. So the idea of tying these three Hashgachos to those individuals is so that Klal Yisrael can learn from Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, and they can understand that it's because they were able to perceive Hashem and not allow their insecurities and the state that they were in to affect their perception of Hashem. So that's an idea that Klal Yisrael should learn from Miriam, Aaron, and Moshe. And it seems like there were different levels. And the highest level, of course, was Moshe, because Moshe had the most knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So as such, he was constantly able to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the same way, despite the insecurities, despite being in the desert in the Midbar. So the concept was that the Jewish people should see the relationship between Aaron and these and Miriam and Moshe and these Hashgachos and try to understand and try to live their lives in line with these perfections, the perfections of them. So it was in order to teach Klal Yisrael and for them to learn from these individuals as to how to live on a perfected level. But that's the tie-in between the three. So of course, when Aaron died, the Anan Mergan, temporarily, it's to teach Klal Yisrael that Aaron lived on a certain level and had a certain relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he was unfazed in terms of his perception of God's ability to protect Klal Yisrael and to protect the people. He was unfazed. And the Jewish people should learn from that, should learn from Aaron's life and the way that he lived. But of course, once the Ananim were gone, so of course, Melech Arad, they thought that the Hashgacha was gone as well. And it wasn't that the Hashgacha was gone, it was just temporary. It was just to teach Klal Yisrael to associate the Hashgacha with the life of Aaron. But of course, the idea is, Vayishma Knani Melech Arad Yoshev HaNegev, means that the Melech Arad sensed a certain vulnerability of Klal Yisrael. They maintained that the Hashgacha was gone and that Klal Yisrael weren't as protected as before. So that's why they thought it was appropriate to attack. But what was their plan? What exactly, of course, we asked in the beginning of the shir, how is this idea of dress up, this concept of dressing up or changing, it really wasn't dressing up, but it was changing their language. How did they attempt to confuse Klal Yisrael, and how did they really attempt to try to be successful in this way? So I think there's a tie-in here. I think we can put everything together. So if you look at the actual war with Amalek in Kisetze in source number 5, so this is the idea of Zechiras Amalek, of the mitzvah of Zechiras Amalek. And we read it before Purim, and in source number 5, it's Perchafei. It's Parshas Kisetze, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Zachor Es Asher Asaluch Amalek, Baderech Betzeisuchem in Mitzrayim. So it says to remember what Amalek did when the Jewish people were leaving Mitzrayim. Asher karecho baderech vayizanev becho kol nechshalim acharecho v'yatal yif yagia v'lo yarei alokim. So they came after Klal Yisrael, and they came after the weak ones and the weary, and Klal Yisrael were tired and exhausted. V'lo yarei alokim. Rashi says v'lo yarei alokim. Amalek, they didn't fear Hashem. They didn't fear God. And of course, we all know that there's a special mitzvah to destroy Amalek. But one thing you see from here, from source number 5, is in source number 6. And this is going to tie into the concept. But if you look in source number 6, Rashi says, They were very tired and exhausted, and they were thirsty. They didn't have anything to drink at the time. They were just tired. And it says afterwards, right after they needed water, it says Vayavo Amalek, that Amalek came to attack them. So we have to understand the state of Klal Yisrael when Amalek attacked them. They were in a weary state. They were very thirsty. And if we look back in Bishalach, in Shemos Perek Yed Zayin, so there's something interesting in the story of the war with Amalek. It says in source number 7, it says, Vayavo Amalek vayilachem im Yisrael berufidim. So this is the actual story, where Amalek attacks Klal Yisrael in a place called Rufidim. Vayomer Moshe Yoshua b'char lanu an Hashem v'tzei lachim b'Amalek machar anochi nitzav arosh ha-giva u'matei alokim b'yadi. So Moshe says to Yoshua to fight, and in the meantime, Moshe went up on this mountain with Aaron and Chur. Vayas Yoshua kasher amar lo Moshe li lachim b'Amalek u'Moshe Aaron v'Chur alu rosh ha-giva. So Yoshua, the instructions for Moshe were that Yoshua choose the right individuals to fight. And in the meantime, Moshe went up on this mountain with Aaron and Hur. And if you go to the next page on the story sheet, it says, V'haya kasher yarim Moshe yadov v'gavar yisrael v'chasher yaniach yadov v'gavar Amalek. Whenever Moshe would raise up his hands, the Jewish people were successful. And whenever he would put his hands down because he was tired, so Amalek was successful. So what's the concept? Was there anything special in Moshe's hands? That Moshe, when he would raise his hands, they would win? No. So if you look in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, if you look in source number 8, the Torah Tmima quotes it. It says, "Kasher yarim Moshe yado, v'chiyadav shel Moshe osos milchama, were the hands of Moshe, the arms of Moshe doing war, o shovros milchama, did they have any effect on the battle? Ela lomar lecha, what's it teaching you? Kol zman shayu Yisrael mistaklin klape mala, u'mishadnin es libam lavim shvashmaim, hayu misgabrim, v'im lav, Hayunoflin." So it comes to teach you that whenever the Jewish people were looking up to the sky, just as Moshe would put his hands up, so it was kind of a symbol for them or a sign for them to look to God and to ask Hashem to save us. So that's when they were successful. But when Moshe's hands were down and the Jewish people didn't rely on Hashem, they relied on their own strength, so that's when they failed. So what do we see about the war with Amalek? And maybe we can understand the attempt of Amalek to destroy Klal Yisrael here in this second war. So we see that the Jewish people were in a really vulnerable state, and they were very weak and weary, and they really needed to be dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the fullest degree in order to be successful. So now, as they were coming into Eretz Yisrael, and they faced the Canaanim, or the Amalek, so what was the plan of Amalek? So now it makes sense. See, the plan of Amalek was that they understood that the Jewish people had a certain fear of Amalek, and they had a certain relationship because of the original war with Amalek. And that would cause them to have a certain type of tefillah. A certain level of tefillah would emerge because they had already experienced this war with Amalek and they were already scared and they knew what could happen to them. So if they faced Amalek again, Amalek knew that Klal Yisrael would be in a state where they would dive into Hashem and they would be mispalel to the fullest degree. And they would have no reliance on their own self, on their own strength, as opposed to Canaan, where the Jewish people, they didn't face Canaan yet. And also they were promised by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to destroy Canaan. So perhaps if the Jewish people dive into Hashem in a way where they believe that they could actually destroy them, and they believe it was not just in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it was in their hands as well, which might emerge if they approached it as if they were approaching Canaan. So the idea was that their tefillah would be flawed, and they'd be lacking in their tefillah. So again, the plan of Amalek was a very beautiful, very interesting idea. The plan was not that the particulars or the specifics of the tefillah would be lacking, but it's the nature of the tefillah, that if Klal Yisrael maintained or believed they were going up against Amalek, then their tefillah would be a different type of tefillah than if they were going up against Canaan. If they're going up against Amalek, they already had experience with Amalek, and they needed to really, really be meshabe themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and really recognize their dependence on Him. But if they're going against Canaan, maybe there'd be a flaw that would emerge. Maybe Klal Yisrael would believe or maintain in the recesses of their hearts that they could really destroy them without Hashem's help completely and not be as dependent. So the idea of the tefillah, or the idea, is that they were trying to create a flaw. They were trying to engender and trying to motivate Klal Yisrael to daven in the wrong way, to really daven and be mispalel with a sense of confidence and a sense of haughtiness. So that's why they try to disguise themselves. But what did the Jewish people demonstrate? So they demonstrate through the neder and the tefillah that they were willing to give up of everything that they got, meaning that they recognized that it wasn't theirs, that they didn't have a right to any of the spoils, and they acknowledged, despite, because they were confused, but the idea was that they acknowledged in their tefillah that they were completely dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, despite whether it was a Malek or Canaan, and the Neder just proves that. The Neder is the concept that we don't have a right to the spoils, because it's not ours. We didn't do anything to destroy this nation. It was all HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now the whole idea, the whole story makes sense in the framework of Rashi. So to put everything together in the framework of Rashi, the idea is that really the Canaanim, they sensed the vulnerability on the part of the Jews. They thought that the Hashgacha was gone, and now they could be successful, and they really try to take advantage of the situation. And the Jewish people, so they try to confuse them. They try to get them to be mispalel in a different way, in a flawed manner, as if they were Canaanim, meaning if the Jews approached the Canaanim, perhaps their tefillah would be one of confidence, as opposed to if the Jews knew they were going up against a Malek, because of their past experiences, it would demand a certain level of tefillah, but if they were going up against the Canaanim, perhaps the tefillah would be lacking, and a flaw would emerge, and it would cause their downfall. So that was the approach of a Malek here. And of course, the Jewish people responded appropriately, that they make a neder, and they daven, and they say, we're dependent on you no matter what, and we're willing to give up of all the spoils, meaning it's a demonstration that we don't look at the spoils as ours. It's not really ours, it's really legavo, it's for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's really for the Mishkan, and it's not really ours. So it's really a beautiful idea. In tefillah, there's a lot of ideas here in this Rashi. There's an idea about the Hashgacha of the Ananim tied to Aaron, and there's also an idea about tefillah and how a person's approach to tefillah, if they approach it emotionally in the wrong way, if they're somewhat confident, a flaw could emerge, and even if they're davening, a flaw can emerge in your tefillah. And it's not just the specifics here, it's more of the attitude of Klal Yisrael. Had they believed that they were going up against the Malek, would have been different, or that's what they were banking on. But it turns out that Klal Yisrael, they were on a certain level, and they really approached it and responded appropriately. Okay? Any questions on that idea, on that concept, that point? All right, so if you go on, there's one other approach to this story, and the approach is the Chizkuni, and this also was stunning when I read it. So if you look in source number 9, the Chizkuni also says it's a Malek. He says, Yoshev HaNegev, hu HaMalek. So again, the Chizkuni says that was a Malek in our story. Kedichsev, HaMalek Yoshev Eretz HaNegev. As Rashi quoted, it says that Amalek lived in the south. V'im Amalek, lama nikra shmo Kanani. So then it's the same question that we had in the beginning and that Rashi had on the Torah, which is that if they're really Amalek, why is the Torah referring to them as Kananim? Ela, kishara kadosh baruch hu, shechazar v'nilcham im Yisrael pam shnia. So once Hashem saw that Amalek were trying to fight Klal Yisrael again, a second time, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Inu Asr Lachem Kivne Amon, Shamarti Lachem Altis Garubam, Ela Arehu Lachem Kiknanim Shnemar Bahem, Kiacharim Tacharimim, Ulchach Nikra Kinani. So the idea that the Torah is expressing is that once Amalek chose to fight the Jewish people the second time, so now Hashem says, don't resist from destroying them. Because there's an idea by Amon, by Esav also, which we'll see, but there's an idea by Amon that the Jewish people had to stay away from them and leave them in their lands and not attack them. But it says over here, the Chizkuni is saying that once Amalek decided to attack the Jews a second time, so treat them like Canaan, like the Canaanim, where there's a mitzvah to destroy the Canaanim and to completely eradicate them. So this is a really strong idea from the Chizkuni, and it's hard to understand because the Torah says that because they attacked us the first time, that's the mitzvah to destroy Amalek. But the Chizkuni is saying it's really the second time where the mitzvah, or the idea of destroying them, really emerged. So what's this idea? What's the concept of, or why would you think by Amalek that you shouldn't destroy them, that you shouldn't treat them like Canaanim, even after the first time, where they were attacked the first time, and in Kisetze it says that after that attack, the Jewish people were chayv to destroy them. So what's this concept, the Chizkuni saying, that perhaps you would have thought until this point that there would still be an idea of Altis Garubam, to not attack them and not siege them and not bother them. How could that be? Amalek was this evil nation. So how do we understand this idea of Altis Garubam? What's this Havamina, this possibility, if not for this war, that the Jews couldn't attack Amalek? And why did this war change everything? Why did this second attack change everything according to the Chizkuni? So this is the second idea in the Shir, the second main idea. So let's go do a little history. A brief history, and if you look in source number 10, who was Amalek? Where did he come from? So it says, "Visimna Haisa filegesh le'alifaz ben Esau v'atele le'alifaz es Amalek ela b'nei adah eshes Esau. So Amalek was really one of the grandsons of Esau, the son of Eliphaz. So Amalek was really a descendant of Esau. So it's important to know that he was a descendant of Esau. And if you look in source number 11, in Devarim Parak Beis, the Torah tells us that when it came to Esau and Bnei Esau, we were supposed to leave them alone, just like by Ammon and Moab. So we're supposed to leave them alone. So too, by Bnei Esau, we're not supposed to bother them, leave them in their land. So if you look in source number 11, it says, Vayomer Hashem Eli Lemor. So this is Moshe speaking. So Hashem said to me, saying, Rav lachem sovis arazeh pnu lachem tzafona. So you've been circling this mountain long enough. Turn northward. Ve'sa'am tzav lemor atem overim begvul achichem b'nei Esav ha'yoshvim b'seir v'yiru mikem v'nishmartem me'od. So it says that you're going to be surrounding or approaching the land of Esav, which is Seir, and you should guard yourself, be very careful. So this is Moshe telling the Jews to be careful when you go into the land of Esav. Altis garubam, ki lo etein lachem me'artzam ad midrach kaf ragel ki rushal le'esav nasati eshar Seir. So he says that you shouldn't provoke them. Don't attack them, provoke them. Why? Because you're not entitled to the Yerusha, to the inheritance of Esav. Esav was given Har Seir. It's his. Don't bother them. Ochel tishru mi'itam b'kesef achaltem v'gam mayim tichru mi'itam b'kesef ushisem. So you should buy food for them. Ki Hashem okecha b'irachucha b'chum masi yadecha yadol lech techa esam midbar gadol hazeh. Arba'im shana, zeh arba'im shana, Hashem elokecha imach luchastar tedavar. You've been walking in the desert for 40 years. You haven't lacked anything. So when you go to Esav's land, don't bother them. Don't provoke them. But rather, you should buy food from them and even provide money for their economy. And then it says in Ches, Vanavor me'esachinu b'nei Esav, yoshim b'seir mi'derech haravam, me'las metum gaver, v'nefem v'navor derech midbar Moav. So after the Jews left Esav and they were walking along the border of Esav, they went to Moav. So the Torah here in Devarim says that we're not supposed to provoke Esav. And Amalek was one of the grandsons of Esav. So perhaps the Chizkuni is saying that if not for this second attack on the Jewish people in our Parsha and Chukas, so this idea of Al Tiskarubam would apply, that we shouldn't provoke them. So what is that concept of not provoking them? And again, the question is, why did this second attack change everything? Why is it now that we're allowed to provoke them? So if you look in source number 12, it says, Ki lo etein lachem me'artzam. It's the Rashbam. And the Rashbam explains why we're not allowed to provoke all these nations. V'chein ksiv b'moav al tatzar es moav. V'chein b'vnei Amon al tetzureim. So too by Moav and Amon, which were from Lot. So it says the same thing, that we're not supposed to attack them or siege them or provoke them. Kol ha'zaros halalu hutzrach Moshe lo dia achshav pen yerach levavam lemor. Im ratzon ha'kadosh baruch hu lases lanu nachla v'yicholos b'yado. So Moshe had to tell the Jewish people, lest they think that they have a right to these lands, that Hashem is allowing them to take these lands as well. So now Moshe has to teach them that they don't have a right to these lands, and in fact Hashem gave Esav land for himself. So too by the sons of Lot, they're entitled to their land, and Moshe had to tell Klal Yisrael, don't provoke them, don't think that it's yours. He says, L'chavot why? L'chavot Avraham shekrovav hayu. So why are we not allowed to provoke them? It's out of respect for Avraham, who is their relative. So Avraham, of course, was the grandfather of Esav. And also Lot was also related to Avraham. He was his nephew. So because they were all related to Avraham, so we're not supposed to destroy them. Kasher also Yisrael, v'gam kasav Moshe, lehodia Yisrael shelo yidagu klum. So also Moshe is coming to teach them that they shouldn't be worried. Im le'umos halalu nasa nachla l'chavad avosenu, kol shekein she'ikayim Yisrael lasa tzulhem nachlas amem shenish bel avos. And just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided Yerusha, inheritance and land to these other nations, certainly Hashem will provide for Klal Yisrael. So what's this idea of Al Tisgarubam? What's the concept that the Rashbam is highlighting? And also, why did the second war change everything? What happened over here? So there's one other point I wanted to make in the Shir about this story in our Parsha and Chukos. So that perhaps the idea is that the concept of Avraham, that really it's Esav and Lot. So even though they were Rishayim, and they weren't in line completely with the philosophy of Avraham, But nevertheless, they still had certain ideas, and they had certain, there were certain philosophical points or benefits that they had gleaned from Avram or from being related to Avraham. You know, Esav was an evil man, but he had a lot of good qualities as well. He was a complex individual, so too with Lot. And Lot had absorbed some of the philosophy of Avram, and so had Esav. So they had elements of the philosophy of Avram in their culture, in their religion, in their land. But of course, they had veered off from it. So they were a distortion of the philosophy, but they had certain good elements and elements that reflected on Avraham's greatness. So the idea that Rashbam is saying is that it would be detrimental for Klal Yisrael to attack these nations. Why? Because, of course, we tie our lineage to Avraham and our philosophy to the fullest sense back to Avraham, and to destroy these other nations would harm us. It would be detrimental to the Jewish people because it would take away from our respect for Avraham. So even if we destroyed other nations that were evil, Ammon, Moab, Esav, but still the fact is that they had certain elements and the philosophy of Avraham was contained within them somewhat. And if the Jewish people were to destroy them or provoke them, attack them and destroy them, so it would actually be harmful to the Jewish people because it would affect our view of Avraham. It would be an act of aggression, even in a minor way, towards Avraham, the philosophy of Avraham. And that is something that we need to stay away from. That's something that Moshe is teaching us, that we have to respect, we have to understand and acknowledge these other nations and not fight against them as to not affect and harm our perspective of Avraham. But if we did that, if we were willing to destroy the relatives of Avraham, the grandsons and the lineage of Avraham, so it's really harmful, it's really detrimental philosophically to our perspective of Avraham and our idea of Avraham. So that's what the Rashbam is saying. So now the idea the Chizkuni is saying makes more sense. So he's saying that really what happened was that after the first battle, it wasn't clear that Amalek had, it seems like according to the Chizkuni, it wasn't clear that Amalek had abandoned the philosophy of Avram and were really willing to destroy Klal Yisrael to the point where they were opposed to the philosophy of Avram and the philosophy of the Jewish people. But now with the second war and the second battle, Amalek was really, they were giving up any relationship they had to us and to Avram, because they're willing to destroy us at this point. And by doing so, they were creating a pattern of opposition to the philosophy of the Jewish people. And now at this point, the Jewish people, when no longer in destroying them, would no longer be demonstrating any type of aggression or hatred towards Avraham or any type of harm would be gone. And now the Jewish people were instructed to treat them like the Canaanim, just destroy them completely. So the concept that Esav or Bnei Esav reflect Avraham was gone with Amalek. Amalek lost that concept in attacking Klal Yisrael in this vulnerable state. And I think the idea of Neder is tied into this as well, because the idea of Neder is an idea of a lack of, it's the same idea as before, it's not us. It's a lack of personal involvement. And it could be that the Jewish people, it could be harmful if the Jewish people were to approach Amalek from a vendetta standpoint. We want to take advantage of Amalek, and we want to get a vendetta and get revenge against Amalek. There are Esav. Esav was evil. He was the older brother. So the idea was that they recognized that the concept of destroying Amalek was because of the fact that they no longer represented Avraham and the philosophy of Avraham in any way. And it wasn't out of a desire to destroy Esav or to destroy Amalek from personal standpoint, from just personal vendetta. So that's the idea of the Neder. And in fact, we learn this idea from Yaakov. If you look in source number 13, it says, "Vayider Yaakov neder leimor im yelokim imadi ushmarani baderech hazer asher anochi olech v'nasan li lechem lechol veged lobosh." So when Yaakov left the house of his parents' house, so he was nervous. He was going to face Esav. He was nervous. So he says that if Hashem provides for him and protects him and gives him food, v'shavti v'shalom abisaviv v'haya Hashem li lelokim, he says that if I'm able to return and Hashem will be a God for me, So he makes a neder that he's going to give a portion, maaser, to Hashem if he's protected, if he's saved. And Rabbeinu Bechaya says in source number 14, Darshu Rabbeinu Zal, my lemor, lemor ledoroshu nodrin be'ez tarasan. So we learn from Yaakov that sometimes it's appropriate to make a neder that you're going to give something to the Mishkan, you're going to be make a neder to consecrate something in the time of need, in the time of tzara, of pain. V'afal pishis yira Torah al neder v'al shvua l'dvar mitzvah mutter. So even though in general the Torah tells us not to make a lot of nedarim and not to make a lot of shvuos, but in a situation of tzar, It's appropriate. So what's the idea of neder in a situation of tsar? It's an idea of trying to remove ourselves and our personal involvement and our personal belief in our own abilities, and to not make it personal. And that's what neder does. Neder takes the idea, or takes the concept, that it's not ours. It's not our spoils. We recognize that it's all a Kaddish Baruch Hu. It has nothing to do with me. So that's the idea of neder. Same thing over here. The concept of fighting Amalek wasn't about us. It wasn't about us taking a vendetta or revenge against Amalek, or even about the idea of Esav. It's the concept of destroying this nation that no longer reflects Avraham and reflects evil, pure evil, without any philosophy of Avraham within it anymore. Okay, so that's really the shir. So let me just summarize one more time. So the summary of the shir is that really we saw in this, in our parsha, in Parshas Chukos, we saw an idea about how there's this mini war, this little war in a couple of psukim between the Jewish people and what seems to be Canaan. But everybody seems to say that it's not Canaan, it's really Amalek. So why does the Torah call them Canaan? So Rashi says that they were trying to trick the Jewish people, and it's based on the Gemara, and they're trying to, or Medrash, and they're trying to trick them, and they're trying to get Klal Yisrael to daven as if they were facing the Canaanim, but really it was the Amalekim, and the Jewish people respond appropriately. So we said that Rashi's concept was that really the main concept of Rashi was that our tefillahs are affected by our emotions, our attitudes, and our attitude towards Amalek was different, or could be different, than our attitude towards Canaan. We faced Amalek, we were scared of them, they took us on in a vulnerable state, so if we were being mispalled to destroy Amalek, it would have a certain level of dependence on a Kaddish Baruch Hu, would reflect a certain attitude and emotion that we had. But a Canaan, perhaps there would be a flaw there. So perhaps we would feel confident, like we could destroy them. So the idea is that Amalek was trying to take advantage of that, and they were trying to take advantage of a philosophical flaw within Klal Yisrael. They thought it was advantageous, especially once the Ananim were gone, that the Ashkacha, they believed that the Ashkacha wasn't with them, and they could take advantage of this. So the Chiddush was that the Jewish people recognized this, and they approached God in the same way as they would as if it were Amalek. And then finally, the Chizkuni says an interesting idea as well, that the point of this is that Amalek, they lost their tie to Avraham in this second war. Meaning once they decided to battle Klal Yisrael a second time, so now the Isser, the prohibition of Al Tisgarubam, was gone. Why? Because really the idea of Al Tisgarubam, according to the Rashbam, is tied to the concept of the philosophy of Avraham, of relating to them as relatives of Kruv of Avraham. But once Amalek decided to oppose Avraham and oppose the philosophy and try to destroy the Jewish people, so once they did that, so now their relationship to Avraham was severed and was broken. And Klal Yisrael, in fighting them, recognized that, and they were able to destroy them like the Canaanim. They no longer had to have any respect for them, and no longer had to maintain, or would no longer be harmful for them to destroy them. And even so, they make a neder to demonstrate that it wasn't personal, that they recognized this idea, that it was really meant, that they were really a representation of, we were a representation of Avram. They lost their relationship to Avram, and therefore they deserve to be destroyed. Okay, so that's really the shir tonight. Thank you for calling in, everybody, and have a good Shabbos. Thank you.